All right, welcome back to the Black Techies Podcast, where Black culture meets the world of technology. I'm your host, David, aka Just Processing. Follow me on YouTube or subscribe to me on YouTube, Just Processing. You can follow me on Twitter at Just Process YT. So as you all know that, you know, we've been doing this series called the Black Techie Spotlight. Well, basically, we interview prominent Black content creators, and we've already had Kevin Nether, aka Kevin the Tech Ninja. We've also had Tech Me Out on here. I am pleased to welcome Mr. Mark Watson, aka Soldier Knows Best. Thank you, sir. Welcome to the show. How have you been doing?
I've been doing good, man. I've been chilling, hanging in here, and just trying to stay busy.
No, I don't blame you. I mean, I'm guessing, you know, has the current pandemic, the current crisis, have you been affected by it at all, or, you know, everything has been relatively smooth?
Yeah, as far as YouTube, I mean, some sponsors wanted to hold off a little bit in the beginning there, but everything's starting to kind of kick back into flow. Really the biggest thing is just I don't travel anymore. So I was getting tired of traveling for a little bit. Just being on the road, going to these events. So it was kind of good to kind of like be able to stay home for like at least 2 months straight. But I'm kind of getting that itch again to start traveling.
Oh, I went to a CES, not this year, last year. And so I've been twice. And the first time I went, I think it was 2017. I didn't get sick. But the last year I got the CES flu. So that wasn't great. So
yeah, I got that a few years, man, and I load up on vitamin C and bring hand sanitizer with me all the time. It's going to be interesting. It's still trying to do it next January, so we'll see if that actually goes through.
I wonder if so. Obviously, with CES, there's like millions, but thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of people that come to that event, and so I wonder if COVID kind of spread through CES, maybe. I don't know, because we didn't really.
I don't know. I mean, it could have, but you know, I it's going to be interesting to see how they pull it off this year, whether or not it's going to be really, really spread out. I mean, I think a lot of companies are going to do like their own events off site and just kind of control who can come. Right. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting mess there.
Yeah, I'm interested in seeing how they pull this off. I mean, everyone else has had all of these virtual events. We just had, you know, Apple had theirs last week. So it's going to be a new day. Well, hopefully not long term. I asked this question to Kevin and Tech Me Out, and I think both of them like the social aspect of, you know, being able to see people and meet people, meet other creators, you know, meet with sponsors or meet with other companies to find, you know, more information about their products. But yeah, I have no idea how that's gonna work, especially since people are, you know, they've canceled fall events. Like a lot of sports are being canceled, much to my chagrin. I'm kind of getting antsy right now, but I'm a Falcons fan, but I don't have any Falcons attire. I need to get some up here somewhere. All right, so let's go ahead and get this interview started proper. So, you know, I gotta ask. I'm pretty sure you've been asked this all the time, but Your name, Soldier Knows Best. How did you? Well, I think it's pretty obvious, but how did you come up with it?
I don't exactly know like what made me think of that name. One day I was just trying to think of something, and I just went with it. But the base of it is that I started doing my tech YouTube videos when I was still in the Army. So I was down on the base down in Georgia, and the first iPhone came out. So I just kind of like I watched some other people's YouTube videos. And then that gave me the idea to make my own video, because everybody kept asking me about the iPhone when I used to walk around with it, because back then I was the only person within maybe a mile that had the iPhone. I was like talking to other soldiers about it, like doing, I was basically doing what I do now, describing it and, you know, giving them my experience with it. So I just kind of, you know, went with that name. I was still in the Army at the time when I was making videos. And it's a kind of a cocky name, Knows Best. I don't know everything, but
maybe there's the thought that, you know, I think at least in this country, we normally give our soldiers a bit of an air of like hero. You know, they put themselves in the line of duty, so there's something about them that's pretty admirable, right? So so maybe, you know, that helps. I don't know. Are you still in reserve? Are you still active duty, or have you retired or from?
Yeah, I got out. I did my 8 years. And I finished up with a few years ago. Yeah. All right. Yeah, it was interesting. A lot of people didn't know that I was actually in the Army. So I still get asked that a lot. Like, people like, were you actually in the Army? But it was a grind, you know, keeping that up and then doing all the other things. But yeah, it worked out.
Right. Okay. All right. So like the whole tech thing, like how did you kind of get into the tech world? I mean, did you go to school for it, or were you just naturally interested in consumer technology?
No. I went to Lincoln University, HBCU up out here in Missouri. And so I did criminal justice. So I haven't touched anything with that. Nothing with that. But when I was a freshman, my roommate, he had we used to game on the computers and stuff. And his computer was better than mine. So I couldn't game at the highest quality. My stuff was just lagging. So from there, I just kind of taught myself how to upgrade and add RAM and change out my GPU and stuff. So that kind of sparked my interest. But in the military, I did Signal. So that works with communications and radios and computers. And that just kind of further, I was like, all right, I like this. I enjoy it. So I just kind of went with it.
Have you, since you've been doing this for a while, I mean, obviously, when you first get into, especially consumer tech, and you're talking about phones and, you know, Qualcomm processors, Apple's processors, and all of the stuff that most people probably don't care about in their phone, or they might not really be aware of it. Like, was it hard getting adjusted to all of the vernacular or all of the, you know, what RAM is or what, you know, all of the things that people who are in the tech world kind of take for granted, maybe.
Yeah.
Or terminology.
I learned, man. I learned, just by watching videos and watching other people little by little, you know, all these different things. And you know, I'm still not like one of those super technical, you know, creators and things like that where I really do a deep dive into it. Yeah, because that's one of the things. Like, I kind of want to know a general thing, a sense of everything. So, but when I do describe it in my videos, I want anybody to be able to watch it and not feel like they have to be a geek or a nerd to understand it. So, yeah, it's just been like over time, over years, I just kind of learned everything and kind of try to soak everything in.
Yeah, it almost reminds me of a certain average consumer. If he's watching this, you know, we're open if you want to be on the show, man. But, if he even does even listen to us, I have no idea. But so your journey on YouTube, how many years have you been doing this?
Including my stupid college videos I put up on YouTube, it would be 15 years.
Oh, yeah, man. All right. Over a decade. So how did you... So tell me about that journey. You know, I guess your YouTube journey, starting out, you know, was it difficult to find out your style or what kind of camera should I use or, lighting and camera angles? Like, how did you figure all that out? Like, as far as your career so far?
You know, honestly, the last 4 years, maybe 5 years, I just really started kind of getting serious about lighting and camera equipment and stuff, because as you know, Marquez just pushed the video quality up. So all, like, everybody Christy, had to step right? up. Yeah, man. Yeah, team Chrissy, him, John, and all them. But yeah, but I was lucky, man. In the early years of YouTube, I used my webcam pretty much for the first 7 years or something, 8 years, just as my main kind of A-roll camera. And then I eventually got a DSLR with Canon and stuff. So I just kind of slowly adopted to the very high quality. But you know, but that's one of the things about back in the day with YouTube, man. It wasn't really about your video quality and stuff. It was just about what content that you were making, you know, what do you want to talk about? And I'm happy that I was able to kind of start in those golden years where, you know, it was just people making content and nobody's worried about money. And because we didn't know anything, YouTube didn't know what it was going to turn out to be. We didn't know. So we were honestly just doing it because we wanted to kind of say something to the world.
Right. And I think that's something that's important to realize for those who are starting out. Like I said, I mean, I have my own YouTube channel. It's called Just Processing, but I mean, I just started it like a month ago. And I use my, like, even filming this, I mean, I'm using my smartphone. I have a Pixel 4 XL, and so I'm using that as my video. Although the iPhone is tempting me to come back, because only because of the video by itself is tempting me to come back to iOS.
Dude, the video is good. It's good, man. Like I find myself using that a lot. Like I like to get outside and record a lot of my videos, and I just pop up my iPhone. The HDR is amazing. Like it's just crispy, man. And so like it's really easy to use. So I use my iPhone a lot, and I can't wait to see what the iPhone 12 is going to be. I mean, that'll be interesting to just bump up the video quality even more than what it already is.
Which makes me, which is why I'm considering it. Could, you know, I've seen a ton of footage of the iPhone 11 Pro, and seeing how great that looks, and if that's even better. And then the I think the design is rumored, although I think we kind of know, is rumored to look more like the iPad Pro, with the more, it looks more like back to the iPhone 5 or whatever, or 4S. That's my favorite design personally. I love the iPhone 5's design. That's my favorite form factor for the iPhone. And if they go somewhat back to that, they might have me again. But
I mean, the Pixel is my favorite for taking photos, but like the iPhone, the video is just, I mean, and some people, you can't even like really tell if you splice it in with a more expensive, DSLR. I mean, it still looks really good. So yeah, man, they're killing it with the video.
So I guess what would you say, after 15 years, what would you say is the hardest part about being a content creator in general?
It's just keeping staying motivated in a way, because yeah, a few years ago I got like just burned out, man. Like I was like doing so much, because I did a lot of videos, and then I did a live streams throughout the week, and I was still in the Army Reserves at the time, and I was just doing a lot of traveling. It's just kind of like one day just kind of collapsed on me, and so from there it was just kind of like trying to find that motivation, or trying to find exactly what is it about making videos that you really like, and try to get back to that. Because I was guilty of trying to fit in a little bit when I came back, because things in the tech world kind of changed a little bit after I kind of like slowed my videos down. But now it's kind of like just finding your rhythm, and not, and for me, honestly, it's not about chasing a bunch of views or chasing the trending page and things like that. Like I put a lot of effort into videos that I know aren't going to get a lot of views, but I'm happy with the video. I'm happy with the content, and I know that the people who watch it, or hopefully the people who watch it, are going to like it. And that's where I'm at in a space now. And so like, yeah, I've made my relationships and things like that with sponsors, so I'm able to keep everything going. But it's just really just being really happy with the videos you put out more than anything. And that was the hardest thing that I kind of lost a little bit for a couple of years, but I got it back now.
Well, I mean, you're nearly, I'm looking at your page now, you're nearly at 800,000 subscribers. So clearly, some people like the content. So I applaud you. You go subscribe to this man, so he can get to 800, 800K. But honestly, that actually leads into my next question. Nice little segue there. So how do you manage, and this is kind of a personal one for me in a way, because I want to eventually get to a point where we are able to interact with sponsors, or interact with companies, and form relationships, and all that kind of stuff. How do you manage those kinds of relationships to with companies, to kind of do business with them? And I'm sure Michael Fisher, Mr. Mobile, and at the end of his videos, he always says, this video was not or rather, the content wasn't pre-approved by the company. They're looking at it at the same time you're looking at it, and all that stuff. So, like, how do you manage those relationships with people, with companies that you do business with?
I'm kind of free flowing. I don't do what Michael does at the end of every video, because if I do a sponsored video, I always tell you up front, with text on the screen, and also via the audio, and it's also in the description. Because technically you're supposed to do it within like the first 30 seconds or something like that. So I always make sure I do that, and then after that I just roll with it. But yeah, and so yeah, sometimes people, they may not trust what you're doing as the sponsor or not, but as long, like for me, I always tell it up front. But the videos that aren't sponsored, I just kind of like just let them go. I don't feel like I need to tell them that it's not sponsored.
Right.
But yeah, but as far as relationship, like with companies, I mean, it's actually mostly with the PR, you know, agencies and things like that. And that's what I learned is that because, the companies go through them for the most part. And so for me, it was always about building that relationship with that person because they go between agencies a lot. Like I work with some people that have been with three different agencies, but they remember you. And so that's more important than trying to like get a company's attention. You better get those PR companies' attention and see what they're looking for. And honestly, like over these past few years, I've done a lot of like not expecting anything in return, but just favors as far as like last minute stuff and grinding and doing that. And they remember that, you know, they're like, all right, this guy, you know, he helped us out in a pinch. And so then they'll often come back to you. So, so yeah, finding out those PR companies that work with these brands and things like that, that's who you need to be looking for instead of going to like, you know, Sony's PR or something like that. Just go to try to figure out who's actually moving between these companies because a lot of them also work with a bunch of other companies as well. So if you do a good job with them, they'll look at you for something else.
Yeah. I mean, I find that now I don't necessarily interact with PR companies for this, but on the side, I'm a tech blogger for a site called TechSpot. And so because it's not like quite the Verge level, but it's more like we get enough where we get a bunch of sponsors on it. If you go to the website, you see ads and stuff, but you know, companies will send us stuff to review. But because I write articles on there, you know, PR companies see that. And then I get a whole bunch of emails saying, hey, would you like to write about this? You know, our CEO is blah, blah, blah. You know, so I can definitely understand having to manage PR companies, especially. So it kind of was somewhat switching gears. So I've noticed in the Black community as a whole, the technology isn't necessarily like the biggest thing, or at least it's not as popular. I don't know. At least when I was growing up, we were seen as, you know, the geeky kids, the nerdy kids or whatever. But like when you were, I guess, when you started doing all of this, have you faced any pushback from the Black community, or was it more like, oh, wow, this dude looks like us. Let's look at him. You know, or I don't know. Have you faced any kind of negative reactions or anything, or has it been mostly positive?
It's not necessarily just with the Black community. It's pretty much like anybody that doesn't really know about YouTube and stuff. When I tell them like, hey, I'm a YouTuber, you either get two reactions. Like it's either somebody who's genuinely interested, like, oh man, that's cool, like, you know, they want to know about it and stuff like that. And then there's other people like, oh man, that ain't no real job and stuff like that. So I've gotten both of those from people in all communities, but I would think just from like from Black people that I know and I've talked to them about it, a lot of them seem very interested in it, not just like with tech, but they just become interested in YouTube itself. And I'm trying to tell them like, hey man, you can get on here and no matter what you want to talk about, there's a path if you want to try to make some money online and do this. And so those type of interactions have been mostly positive. And you know, I think just in general, a lot of people, you know, don't really know they're into tech because they know they want a really good phone that has a good camera, that has great battery life and stuff like that. So everybody's interested in tech, they just don't know it, or they may not think they know it. So I think with our community, man, it's just been kind of like people are slowly coming aboard, and I just try to, like, if I talk to somebody else about it, I just try to see what they want to talk about and try to push them in the right direction with YouTube.
Yeah, I think for the Black community especially, people don't realize. I mean, anyone can start their own YouTube channel. I mean, you have a camera; it's on your phone, right? Most people have at least, you know, some kind of smartphone. If you want to make video, you know, buy a cheap little have one there. You know, buy one of these. You know what I'm saying? You know, buy a little stand or whatever. Put it right there on your desk. And film yourself. I mean, you know, I was watching Marquez's earliest videos, and he's just there, you know, reviewing I think it was an HP laptop or something like that he had, and he was using the webcam that was on the HP, I believe. I think similar to how you started. So it's like, you know, there's opportunities out there, and I think that YouTube or maybe even just or podcasting, you know, those elements is really easy to get into, and you don't need, you know, an expensive audio and camera setup. You know, that's great if you can afford that, if you can get to that level, that's great. But it's like, if you're just starting out and you want to make content, do it, you know. We've seen the rise of game streaming. You know, just look on Twitch and there's a bunch of people just filming themselves playing video games. I mean, that's like the easiest thing you can do. So it's funny you say people don't realize they're into tech until they
until you tell them. Like, it's like, right. You think you don't care about it, but all right, let the internet go out for a second. You'll be crawling on the floor, or you know, or your computer's going really slow, or your router sucks, like your Wi-Fi sucks. Like, it's just like, you know, people just have to know. And just with YouTube tech, man, I see more and more Black creators start to come up. I don't think it's enough. I think there still needs to be more. And, you know, I work with YouTube with this initiative called YouTube Black. And basically, mm-hmm. I've been working with them for 5 years or so. And just bringing creators, Black creators from all different genres. And we do meetups usually yearly. And we do a lot of stuff in the background where we're talking with YouTube about different features and things like that for Black creators and things like that. And what I learned from that is it's just people just don't know how connected we are. Like I literally go to these events sometimes. I'm talking to people because I get a lot of tech. And I'm like, look, what do you need? Like, if you need something, hit me up. Like, not just because you just want it, but if you actually need something for your channel or something like that, hit me up. And you'd be surprised how many people don't, but I hear them complaining about like not having stuff. And I'm just like, you know, trying to force it into some people's. And I just think that we can just, if we understand like how connected we are and, you know, it can just get better, man. So yeah, I mean, it's gotten a lot better, and YouTube with YouTube Black is a great thing. But yeah, I think it can be way more because we're talented and we just not, I see people post a lot of good videos on Instagram and Facebook, but they're not monetizing it. So,
right.
You know, they can easily do it and just got to, I think they just need to know how. And that's something I want to get better at, trying to spread the awareness about, especially out here in St. Louis.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the good thing is, I mean, there's been a rise of Black, you know, popular Black content creators. I mean, obviously there's MKBHD, there's Marquez, there's Juttner, Your Average Consumer, technically T yourself, who else? Flossie. I love Flossie. Flossie Carter. I need to get him on here. I might have to like bleep every other word, but I would love to have Flossie on here. But yeah, I mean, and the fact that you all are doing so well and that you're well known. I mean, Samsung features Flossie on their promotional material. I mean, Marquez just did a spot with was it not OnePlus? It was it Huawei? I think I forgot. I saw some ad that he was in. I forgot. But I mean, the fact that you all are doing well and that it's, you know, it's open to the public, you know, it shows other people, other Black people that, hey, look, if they can do it, you can do it. You know, all they have to do is just watch your earlier videos. Look at where they came from. If they can come from there and get to where they are now, what's stopping you from doing the same thing? So I think that, I think they're definitely, I need to write that down. You said YouTube Black. Let me, I might have to, you know, hit me up after this. I might have to.
I will. Gotcha.
We might have to be a part of that. Just to, you know, be a little more somewhat less serious. I don't know. You mentioned gaming before. Are you still a gamer?
Yeah. I don't make a lot of gaming videos and stuff like that, but I still play a lot. I need to start making some videos, some gaming content, since I play so much. And I'm talking about monetizing something that you already do.
Right.
Yeah, man, I still, I'm mostly PC game now, but I'm excited for the new consoles.
Are you, do you play any of the consoles now, or are you like strictly PC?
Right now I'm strictly PC. Well, I'm playing the Last of Us 2 on the PlayStation, but if it's something that I can play on my PC, I'm going to play it on my PC.
Yeah, I do the same thing. Yeah. what kind of parts you got in there? I'm a PC gamer myself, so I'm just kind of curious.
I got the 2080. So I worked with Velocity Micro, I think late last year. So they sent me over a gaming rig for a video. I got 2080 Ti inside of there and good amount of stuff, good amount of RAM. I forgot all the specs, but it's a good amount of stuff in there.
As long as it works, right?
Yeah.
So how do you so you know, obviously with the coronavirus kind of ruining everyone's year, along with a whole bunch of other stuff that's been happening, how do you see the tech world affected by this for the rest of the year? I mean, obviously, you know, Apple just had WWDC virtually, which honestly, I think they should do this every year. That was a
I
very
do.
slickly produced video. That was great.
I think and they look like they have fun, man. And I think it lasted, you know, the same amount of time. It just felt like we got way more information because it's no like, you know, dead space or swapping out presenters and walking on stage and stuff like that. So it looked good and I think it's great. And everybody seemed to have fun with it on Apple side. And I don't know if they'll do it, but, you know, hopefully, I don't know, man. I do like the live audience, but the online part was just good. It was really good.
I mean, you don't want to hear everyone clapping every 5 seconds.
It's just straight to the facts.
I'm trying to think. Well, but yeah. So, I mean, do you think that this is going to affect, you know, companies moving forward as far as maybe like release dates or, I mean, you know, generally, you know, most of the big name products, the Galaxy Note series, the iPhone, Pixel, you know, those are normally announced in the fall. So, do you think those will be affected in any way, or you think they will be released normally how they, you know, at their normal dates? Or usual time frames.
I think most things will stay similar. Things may be pushed back a week or a few weeks, but I think tech right now is kind of like Netflix. I mean, Netflix in July is dropping like 60 original, you know, shows and movies. So I mean, they're just keeping things normal. So I think with tech companies, I mean, their roadmap goes out years, so they already know what they want to release in 3, 4 years. So I think definitely for this year, I think things would be pretty similar. And we'll see some delays, but until, I mean, most of these companies don't announce it, so you really don't know what has been delayed or not. But I think things would be pretty similar this year. But if this thing goes into like this time next year, I think that's when we'll see like you may start to see some changes towards the end of 2021. But I think for right now, we're pretty everything should be pretty stable.
Yeah, hopefully. I'm looking to upgrade this year, so we'll see what happens. So actually, kind of going back to WWDC, what do you did you have a the were any of the announcements particularly interesting or surprising to you?
Well, no, I mean, most of the core things we kind of already knew was going to happen. And I mean, them just switching over to their own silicon, their own platform is big. Movement away from Intel is big, big, big. And I think that's when we'll start to see in 2 years, 2, 3 years, where everything is going to be their platform and their processors and stuff. We'll start to see iPads and iPhones and everything start to even become more integrated. And hopefully, you know, I mean, hopefully the price come down too because they have more control, but we'll see. It's Apple. But yeah, I mean, that was like the big thing. But then iOS 14, it works really well, man, because I mean, I've been using it ever since 2007 and it's been the same home screen besides like folders and stuff. And I got like, 'cause every year I get excited for the hardware, but then as soon as you boot it up, it's like, oh, it's the same thing. Like, and on Android, you know, you can make it your own. So these widgets and stuff like that are big. I mean, I know it's simple as widgets, but it changes just the look of iOS to where I think everybody when they download it in the fall when it comes out, it's going to be something that's cool. People are going to be talking about it. So, yeah.
Do you prefer the implementation of widgets on iOS 14 or Android? Or did
Definitely not. iOS 14 for sure, because
it?
it's like yeah. Because even on Android, I don't really I have some custom widgets, but I don't really like mess with them that often, or I'm not really super huge on widgets. But with iOS 14, the thing that works for it is just because it's simple, it's clean, and when you move it around, everything still remains uniform. And I think that's why Apple doesn't just want to give us total control because they want you to pick up somebody else's iPhone and know how to use it right away if you need to for some reason. And it still is a very clean interface. But then, yeah, how you can stack the widgets on top of each other and swipe between them. And it's just a little kind of the fit and finish on them just kind of like appeal towards me a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny because after they announced it, there's a preponderance of tweets about how, you know, iOS 14 is basically stealing all of Android stuff or like or copying all of Android stuff, which I mean, I can understand that, but
No, but man. They like every company puts
steal from each other
in their phones. Well, it's not even steal. Like it's like are you stealing somebody else's idea? Like are you stealing somebody else's idea for a podcast? No, you're doing a podcast. So the name, mm-hmm. like the name of the action that you're doing is the same. But I mean, when you use iOS 14 widgets, it's nothing like it is on Android. Like if they just like completely copied, I would have that. But yeah, I mean, yeah, it's one of those. I'm gonna make a video talking about that because I sent out a tweet and I got like a lot of people replying like they were thinking like I was like bashing Android. I was like, no, I mean, you know, I mean, it's to the point to where I really strongly believe Apple doesn't care about what all these other companies do. Like I honestly, they move at their own pace. They do their own thing. They could have been put out widgets they really wanted to, but they slowly changed their platform, which I hate at times, but I can respect because. Mm. They honestly, I honestly feel that for at least most things, besides like adding a calculator app and weather app to the iPad, but for most things, they're truly not doing it because they haven't figured out what they feel is the best way to do it. And again, it frustrates me at times. Like I think widgets should have been out 3 years ago. They have a lot of smart people over there, but yeah, I don't think Apple's like looking at Android trying to copy everything because when you look at iOS 14, there's a lot of cool stuff in there that you can't do on Android. But people are just kind of ignoring because of widgets. Yeah,
I mean, I'm a fan of both. In fact, I have the Pixel, but I switched the Pixel for last year. Before that, I was with iOS, and I've had an iPhone since iPhone 5. So the only reason I really switched is because I was kind of tired of iOS. I was like, all right, I want something different. Yeah. And now it's like, all right, now I want to go back to iOS.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mostly use Android throughout the year. I love Android, and I love stock Android or something that's close to it, like what you get with Oxygen OS on the OnePlus phones. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, the more Apple adds customization, I think again, I don't think they're gonna go as far. They're not gonna give you as full control as what you can do on Android, but. As they start to add these little features that people have been waiting for, I mean, I think Android has something they need to kind of maybe step it up a little bit more and put it in high gear. Yeah, we'll see.
I wonder if, you know what's funny? Apple adding these features that are on Android actually makes it harder for people to want to switch to Android because it's like, well, if Apple has those features, why would I want to go to Android? Yeah. But, and you know what's funny? I was watching the interview that Marquez had with Craig Federighi, the Apple's senior vice president of software. I forget what his title is, but or you know, as some people call him, Air Force One. he asked him, you know, why is it that you all are just now. He asked him about the being able to set the browser and the mail app as defaults for that. And he was like, well, why not go further with maps? And Craig said, he said something to the effect of, they want to make sure that it's not like the Wild West. And so, because I know there are other corporate reasons, but I think from a privacy perspective or security perspective, they didn't want apps to masquerade as browsers. And now you can set, you know, any app that can use web UI or whatever, or WebKit rather, as a native browser. They didn't want Twitter to become your native browser app. So I think the reason they're doing it now is because now they're able to implement it in a way that ensures security. So you can only set like Chrome or Firefox or Edge as your browser. You can't set some random app as your native browser. Yeah. So I can understand that. I get that. So also, I'm pretty sure they don't. I don't know. Like you said, Apple moves on his own time, and I think they like to have things bake and just make sure that it's done. Apple's never first, really, in most things, but they usually when it comes out, it's usually done with polish.
Well, when you look at Apple, I mean, yeah, and I think as a consumer, like we're tech, so we're going to talk about it, but a consumer doesn't care where the feature came from. They just want it on their device, right? I think that Apple, I mean, a lot of that, just them allowing, you know, different browsers and stuff like that, that's really mostly due to the EU kind of like getting strict on them because for making sure they have fair competition and people have they have access to other different apps instead of using the default services. And because the EU has hit Microsoft really hard with that too, so I think that's a big reason why they're doing it. But again, as a consumer, I don't care. Like, as long as I now have the option, and now that I have it, so yeah, Apple, you know, iOS is it's definitely again, I like just like you, I got bored, you know, with it a few years ago. I mean, it was just the same thing you're looking at. I like the general nature of it, but yeah, it seems like just Apple as a whole company is changing. They're really becoming a little bit looser, you know, not taking themselves as seriously, and you see that with them working with YouTubers and stuff like that. I wish they would have did this, you know, 8 years ago with us, right. But yeah, you see them as a company kind of changing, and you see iOS just reflecting that too. So it's going to be a win for us consumers.
Do you think that I'm gonna wrap up soon, but do you see any potential downsides of this whole they're moving the Mac to their own silicon? Like, do you see any downsides to this growing control that Apple wants on their devices? I just put out a video a few days ago about why Apple is switching from Intel, and my main conceit was that it's all about control. I mean, if you don't have to rely on Intel or AMD or anyone else to innovate on their side, you only have to worry about you, then yeah, that does make, obviously, you know, that makes things a lot smoother. But are there any like hidden or unintended consequences maybe of being so tightly integrated that like, when you want to like maybe come out a little bit, maybe it makes it harder? I don't know. I've always wondered that.
I think for Apple, well, I don't see anything negative. I mean, for Apple, yeah, I think any company would want, if they can do everything in-house and it can be more affordable and they have more control, every single company would take advantage of it. And it's just that Apple kind of just... I don't know how long they've been working on this, but when the day that they said, you know what, man, bump this. We're not relying on Intel delaying or dealing with the heating issues. We're going to do our own thing. And that's what they've been kind of like. It's been a beta test with the iPad Pro with their processors and the iPhone and just kind of building up to this moment. I don't see anything really bad that can come out of it. I mean, other companies just have to get more serious. I mean, Intel is definitely going to take a hit. It's not good for them.
Take a look at their stock price, right?
Yeah, I wonder what happened with that. But, you know, yeah, I think, I don't know, Apple's always been pushing towards this. They want to control the experience as much as possible. And I think when they have to use, even the fact that I think when they have to use Samsung for their displays and stuff like that, I think it makes their skin crawl a little bit, because if Apple could make their own displays and figure that out and not have to spend a bunch of money, they would. And maybe one day they will. But yeah, Apple is going to be charging hard towards just like, when you get their phone, it's everything that they want to be inside of it, how they want it. So,
I mean, I wonder, I mean, does it like for the screens? I mean, at some point, it's going to be more expensive to do everything yourself. I mean, some things, it's not, I don't know, because I think, yeah, Samsung makes their makes the screens for the iPhone, I think iPad, and for the their Pro Display XDR, I think LG, or is it, yeah, I think LG makes
it. Or it might be a combination, I can't remember, of the two, yeah.
But, I mean... Now, they might have a lot of say as to how that screen is calibrated and all of that, you know, at some point, it becomes more of a hassle to do everything yourself versus some things can be farmed out to somebody, but...
I mean, you're right, but the thing is, Apple has so much money, man. They have more money, and the thing is about Apple, it's not the hardware that... another video idea, don't steal it from me, man. But I want to like do a video just saying like Apple doesn't care which iPhone you buy, as long as you buy an iPhone, right? Because they make the money from the services, you know, Apple Pay, your Apple TV Plus, your iTunes subscriptions, all like that money that's guaranteed to come in every month out of your pocket. That's where the money is, all of these services. So the hardware, as I think all of us are experiencing, like, your phone from 3 years ago is just fine. Like, it's harder for people to sell you a new phone when your phone is still really good. I mean, the only thing you really want to change is software. And cameras are getting to the point to where these $300, $400, $500 phones are starting to get cameras that are not as good as those $1,000 one, but they're good enough. Right. So with Apple, yeah, even with the hardware and stuff, man, it's like, I think they can take the hit on, you know, making the Mac Pro themselves, right? Making it themselves in America for the most part. And it costs more, it costs them more money, but they can, they're making so much from these extra services in the $600 wheels. they can do that, right? So, and Apple's just one of the only companies that I think can afford to really take that hit on hardware, but make it up with all of these other different services.
Yeah, I think the focus on services, I think, has been kind of an overriding trend in the last few years. I mean, people see the word subscription like, hey, we have a recurring revenue stream now. And so, I mean, even you see Microsoft doing this with Xbox Game Pass, and you can technically purchase a new Xbox or even a Surface, I think, using like a payment plan and like have it all bundled together. So like there's always this move towards subscription services. That's a video by itself too. Right, this move towards subscription services and recurring revenue for companies, you know, instead of having that one purchase, okay, how can we continue making money off of you after that one purchase? So, yeah. You know,
I recommend everybody go check what you're paying every month. Like I did that. I'm like, man, I got all this stuff that I'm paying for. Like it adds up. When you really like forget about it for a little bit, I'm like, man, I got to cut some of this stuff off. It's too much. Right. Everything is a subscription based now. So, I mean, it's good in some ways, but also you can kind of get in that trap of just like not even knowing how much money you're paying every month for $2 here or $4 here. Right. It just adds up.
And apparently it's going to be kind of annoying because it's like, all right, NBC, CBS, Fox, ESPN, Disney, they all have their own little separate little bike. I'm like, okay, bring back cable.
Then HBO Go Max, whatever. Yeah, I don't know what HBO is like that. Like even you can be the most techie person. I'm confused as far as like what each name and what the app. I don't even know what HBO. I don't have, and it doesn't make any sense. I know it may be like maybe more stuff going on in the background, but.
Right.
I don't know, man. Just call it HBO and then in the app give you three different options or something.
Man. You know, that makes too much sense, though. You know, maybe we need to call up AT&T. Like, what are y'all doing? Yeah. All right. I got one last question. So, and I'm sure you probably get asked this all the time, too. But as far as like starting out, like what tips would you give to any burgeoning content creators as far as, you know, they want to start off on YouTube, you know? A tech YouTuber, even. Well, what tips would you have?
Just really think about what you want to talk about, because even like when you say if you want to be a tech YouTuber, that can be broken down to a lot of things. Like you can just want to talk Apple, you can want to talk smartphones, you can want to talk, you know, gaming and things like that. So, you know, look at the category that you want to do, but then find out exactly what you want to talk about and make sure it's something that you can talk about for a long time, and not just whatever is trending right now. Just make sure it's something that you really like. And then, like you said earlier, man, like your phone is powerful enough to where you can use that as your camera, you can use that as your microphone, and that you can use it to edit your videos in a lot of ways too. But yeah, don't go broke trying to get all the best equipment. Just get little pieces here and there, man. Like, you know, like we were talking, you know, off camera before about the Sony ZV-1, and that little camera from Sony is a pocket camera. It costs like $750, something like that. So it's not, you know, just the cheapest out there, but that can be used for so many different things. You can use it as a webcam. You can use it, like, if the quality is good enough to where I would use it, you know, right alongside my Sony a7 III DSLR. And it's small and compact and it goes everywhere with you. So honestly, that would be a good camera to start with. And then from there, get a good microphone where you can get that from a lot of different places. So yeah, I mean, just don't go broke spending a lot of money on your own equipment. And then also look at, you know, used equipment as well. You know, a lot of good things that came out a year or 2 years ago. I think society kind of puts us in this way. It's old. Don't use it, but it's still plenty good. And then lastly, make those connections with people. You know, if you go to any of these events or you're talking to people online, like make those connections with people because you all can help each other out. You all can promote each other and don't be afraid to ask for help. That's one thing that I've been kind of stubborn on. Like I don't typically like to ask for help, but there's people who know way more about you than cameras and video quality that you can lean on. So don't be afraid to ask for help and just get out and do it. Like it takes practice to kind of get comfortable in front of the camera, but the more you do it, you'll see that it becomes easier.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. I mean, that's part of the reason why we're doing this whole series is because we wanted to reach out to other Black creators and kind of network and try to, see how other people are doing things. How did they come up in with their own YouTube channel or whatever? So all of those tips are very much appreciated, and hopefully our audience will appreciate them as well. I think that's. Yeah, that's it for me. I definitely appreciate you being on the show. Just to end things, like I said before, for you all, man, I can't talk. For you all for watching or listening, you can follow me on Twitter at JustProcessYT. Follow the Black Techies at the Black Techies. If you want to talk more about this, we have Facebook page, facebook.com/TheBlackTechiesPodcast, and we have a group called the Black Techies Collective. No, it has nothing to do with socialism or communism. It's just called the Black Techies Collective. Basically, it's a group on a Facebook group where we talk about either the show or talk about a whole bunch of other tech stuff that comes out. WWDC, we talked about that. Microsoft may or may not be coming out with a new Fable game based on a tweet from Tom Warren earlier today. But I'm crossing my fingers. But yeah, go ahead and join if you Well, if you want to talk about all that stuff, but since we have a guest, Mr. Mark, where can people find you and how can they see your content?
YouTube, just look up Soldier Knows Best, or just Google that, you'll find me. And
He's the
yeah,
only
because the
one.
name, yeah, unfortunately the name is like one character too long for like Twitter and other places, so I had to put like Soldier Know Best instead of the S on the end of nose. But anyway, just it's annoying as heck, man. But yeah, just Google and or YouTube is definitely the best place to find me.
All right. Well, yeah, we definitely appreciate you coming on the show. We'd love to have you back eventually. One of the other panel members who unfortunately couldn't be on, he suggested having like a one big podcast with you, let's see, you, Tech Me Out, and Kevin, just having like a powwow. I don't know. So if you see an invite from us in the future, hopefully you can join us on that one. But yeah. But so before we leave, there's a phrase that we say after every podcast. I don't know if you've seen Black Panther, but actually, well, who am I kidding? Everyone's seen Black Panther. But okay, most people have seen. Made $1 billion. Most people have seen Black Panther. But at the end of every podcast, we always say "Hail Wakanda." So I'm gonna say "Hail Wakanda." You gotta say it back. All
All
right,
right, I got you.
one,
I get
two,
it.
three, "Hail
Hail
Wakanda."
Wakanda. Oh, I forgot it. I missed it.
You
Hail
got
Wakanda.
it. All right, sir. Thank you so much, and I will see you on the interwebs.
The show, man. Thanks, man.